song. How many folks know Now Let Us Sing? I know some of you will have sung this in other places. We're going to sing the low voice first, which is actually the second line, and then we'll sing the high voice for folks to learn that, and then we'll sing it together. So let's start with the lower voices. Sing. Sing, sing, now let us sing. Sing, sing, sing. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. Now let us sing to the power of the love within. Okay, we're going to do that one more time. You had it towards the end, and so let's just go run through it one more time. And I lied, it's the first line. All right, let's try that again.
Now let us sing, 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 sing. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. Now let us sing to the power of the love within.
And the only thing that changes is that word love might become joy or faith or other things, but everything else is the same. It's nice and easy. All right, we're going to go back and have our higher voices sing the second line.
The hope within, sing to the power of the hope within. Lift up your voice, be not afraid, sing to the power of the hope within.
Okay, we'll do that one more time.
Sing to the power of the hope within. Sing to the power of the hope within. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. Sing to the power of the hope within.
Isn't that nice and fun? All right, so we're going to combine this, and the way it goes is, now let us sing. And then the higher voices start right immediately, okay? Our slideshow has its own opinion of what we should be doing today. Eidetic memory, well done. All right, so here we go. Lower voices first.
Now let us sing to the power of the angels and the lowest. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. And let us sing to the power of the faith within. Let us sing, 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 sing. Now let us sing.
And now we'll sing We Are Building a New Way, number 1017. Is our cry.
Is our cry.
Peace and freedom.
Peace and freedom.
Is our cry.
Is our cry.
Peace and freedom is our cry.
Peace and freedom. Without these, we will die.
Without these, the world will die.
Peace and freedom is our cry. And we're gonna call it a song. Please be seated. Everyone's patience with our technology. Sometimes our phones and things actually will disconnect, and there's lots of things that are the same frequency, and it makes it difficult for it to work. So I want to thank Ken for doing great work and being patient with us as we go forward. My name is Reverend Sunshine Jeremiah Wolf. I am the interim minister here at the First Unitarian Church of Alton. That means I am serving here for a limited period of time while this congregation searches for a new settled minister. I like to say I come to you pre-fired. So I have, you know, got a set thing and then I am gone. And so I welcome you to this place. This is a home where no revealed truths are accepted as absolute, and no scripture or human being is considered to be infallible. This is a place of searching for truth. But we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice, and we believe in compassion and concern for each other and for our entire world. We believe in commitment to those ideals which make us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and particularly to those who may be first-time visitors this morning. We welcome you and especially encourage you to join us after service today for a special celebration luncheon. There is more than enough food for everyone, and it's a great way to get to know us as a community. We like to party, and that is what's happening at 11:30, so join us and see how we party. Information about our church is available at a new member desk, which is just across the room on the other side of this wall. And we encourage new visitors to connect with longtime members, and longtime members to seek out new visitors and share the good news of why you have come to this community and what you like about being here. If this is your first time here, we invite you to fill out visitor cards, which are in the gray hymnals in the pews there, and place that in the offering plate when it goes around. And we will send you our church letter for 3 months and let you know about our programs and activities that are happening here in our community. We are glad you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. If you have children with you, they are invited to attend our religious education time today with Joy and Kelly. Joy and Kelly, if you rise so new folks know who you are. Thank you. They will be working on their semester service project, which is apparently a secret surprise for our congregation, so it's a big deal. So they will be going outside today to work on that project, and when they're invited, just follow Joy or Kelly at that time. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children, and adults are encouraged to attend religious education programs, which are generally at 11:50 a.m. most weeks, this week being an exception because we're going to party. That's going to be our spiritual practice. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We have a handful of announcements this morning. First, our old friends Brenda and Willis McCoy are coming back from Minnesota for a quick visit with their son. They will be having lunch on Friday the 27th at 11:30 at Hibachi Grill in Baldwin. Brenda wanted everyone to know that anyone who would like to join them would be very welcome. She is still very active in our UU Facebook group, and you can contact her there or talk to Mary Weber. Is Mary here? Mary Weber's in the back. We are accepting donations at this time we will be accepting donations beginning March 29th, let me be very specific, for our annual rummage sale. Please note that we do not accept electronics. They don't sell very well. We don't accept large exercise equipment because they are unwieldy. No books, because as much as we love them, they don't disappear as much as we'd like, and we don't want to have to throw them away. And clothing is welcome, just make sure that you clean them and that they are something that you personally would wear into public. Donations should be packaged in bags, boxes, and containers that will be manageable to carry up and down the stairwell, and they can be left in the room that is at the bottom of the stairs.
One last note, we plan to stop accepting donations on April 26th, so you want to get your items in as quickly before that time. Nominations are open for the Ministerial Search Committee. For more info, see any member of the Board of Trustees. They have a yellow name tag. If you're a member of the Board of Trustees, could you stand up? Okay, thank you. And we are looking for a diversity of people with a diversity of skills. So please let us know if you're interested in serving on the search committee. To create a safe place for all of our congregants, we are creating a fragrance-free zone in the sanctuary, which will be the first three pews in this area. Yes. As a fragrance-sensitive person myself, I'm very excited that it's at the front of the room. More and more people are reporting sensitivities to fragrances and may have life-threatening or debilitating reactions to smell good scents. We are marking the first few pews near the piano as fragrance-free zones. If you are wearing cologne, perfume, aftershave, or use soaps, shampoos, lotions, or deodorants that have fragrance, please refrain from sitting in or near those pews. I would also add sometimes the detergent that you wash your clothes in. Those scents can be as well, so just be aware of that. For the next two Tuesdays, March 24th and the 31st, the United Congregations of Metro East is sponsoring conversations about race and community relationships. Involved in these conversations will be Riverbend area police chiefs, mayors, clergy, teachers, and youth. The conversations are free and open to the public and will be held at Morningstar Missionary Baptist Church at 1 East 6th Street, two blocks from here. From 7 to 8:30. This coming Tuesday, police, youth, and clergy will be in dialogue, and the following week, the conversation will be among youth, teachers, and mayors. So all are certainly encouraged. And for those who do not know, the minister at Missionary Baptist Church will be speaking here on Good Friday at noon for the Good Friday service. That'll be here at this church. You're welcome to join us. I'm sure there are many other announcements, but I think that's enough for everybody. So we will conclude this morning's announcements and begin our worship service with a prelude. Center in, to be in this space for this worship time, and to center with these words. Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come and you shall know peace and joy. Come, let us worship together. As Isabel and Tori light our chalice this morning, or at least Isabel. Oh, there. I invite you to join me in reciting our chalice lighting words. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. I now invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 368. Now let us sing.
Now let us sing. Sing, 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 now let us sing.
up your voice, be not afraid. Now let us sing to the power of faith within. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. Now let us sing to the power of hope within. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. Now let us sing to the power of love within. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. And we'll sing to the power of love.
Like to welcome Reverend Thomas Perchlick from the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis, just across the river. He likes to say they're our older sibling by 1 year. And he will be offering our sermon today, but he has brought a wonderfully fun story. And so I invite Thomas to come and share this morning's intergenerational story.
It's a story I've loved since I was a little kid. I can remember reading the little book over and over again, going through, and there's a story about Tina. There's a little girl named Tina. I don't know if any of you, do any of you know someone named Tina? You're in medicine? You know a couple of people named Tina. I remember Tina Turner, powerful woman, woman of strength. That was the only person I knew who was named Tina when I was a kid. And that, so she's a little girl in this story, a little girl with her mom. Her father has died. So they're struggling to survive, and it's hard times. There's not a lot in the world. Things are scarce, so they got to work. They got to work, and mother's working as much as she can to kind of bring things in. And Tina, they live in a small village, so they're able to go out into the country. She's out to go foraging. She goes out, and she finds greens for salads and for stir fries, and she finds mushrooms, and she finds roots and herbs and things, that roots that are under the ground that she can bring that they can eat. She's very diligent about going out every day, going, you know, it's sort of a little dangerous going out into the woods all by oneself, but she's brave and she's safe and she's thoughtful. She brings back food for her home, for her household, so that she and her mom can eat. And one day, she comes into a grove, and there had probably once been a huge tree that had grown up, and now there was smaller trees that were just in a circle. The old tree had fallen and dissolved away, and there was kind of a circle left in the woods. And as she came into that, she started looking around for mushrooms, because the wood from the old roots of the old tree was still allowing mushrooms to grow up, and she was looking to see if there were any that were safe. And she heard someone calling her name, Tina. And she looked up, and there was a woman dressed sort of strangely, someone she did not know, never met her before. But this girl seeing this old woman, as an old woman, said, Tina. And she said, yes, who are you? And the woman said, it doesn't matter who I am. I know who you are. You are the little girl who has worked so hard. You are the little girl who has created abundance for your mother and you, and who helps other people and who works hard. And I'm going to give you a reward. And she takes out from the folds of her clothes, this pot. It's a little black pot with three legs. And it seems to have something inscribed on it. So something, some metal work has been done to it, but Tina can't, it just looks like a design. And the woman says, all you need to do is speak to this pot politely. You must say these words, little pot, start boiling, please. And the pot will start boiling. And then when you're done, when you're finished, you say, little pot, please stop boiling. You have to say that, please stop boiling. And start boiling, please. And if you say those words, then it will always serve you. It will always bring you good things to eat. And Tina's excited about this a little bit. The woman just rises up and walks out into the woods, disappears behind the trees. She doesn't see her anymore. So she takes it home and she asks her mother, can we try it? And her mother says, sure, we can try it. Mother's kind of pleased to see her. And, first they hugged and then they put it on the middle of the table. And Tina says, little pot, start boiling, please. And there's this bubbling sound, and she can see this yellow porridge rising up, and this sweet, delicious smell starts rising through the house. And then as it gets close to the top, she said, little pot, please stop boiling. And it stops, and there's this hot porridge, and they have this delicious meal, and they're so happy, all this food. And so every day, you know, they don't want to have it all too much, because, you know, you kind of get sick of porridge if you're starting to eat it all the time. But it's there. Whenever they need it, they can ask on it, and it comes. Well, one day, Tina goes shopping. Things are getting a little bit better because they have a little bit more food. They can save a little bit of money, and she decides to go and buy some better shoes. And she's going down to the village to see if the cobbler can make her some shoes that would fit her perfectly. And as she's off doing that, her mother invites a neighbor over, and she goes, you got to see this. I'm going to show you something incredible. And she takes the pot out from the place where they store it. She puts it in the middle of the table, and she goes, little pot, start boiling, please. And it starts to hiss and bubble, and then this steamy yellow porridge is coming up, and she says, and then as she's watching it, and everyone's amazed, and she's very proud, and then she goes, okay, you can stop now. And of course, it doesn't stop. And then she said, no, really, stop now. Stop boiling now. Little pot, stop boiling. Oh, come on, please, 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 stop. And nothing happens. She's not saying the right words. She's not being polite, and she's starting to get angry at the pot. And she gets a spoon, and she hits it, and she's whacking, and it's bubbling even more. It's pouring all over the table. It's on the floor. Her friends say, well, this is very interesting, but we're going now. And the mother and her daughter go out, the neighbors, and so then she's just there, and she's trying to put it back in the pot, and it's flowing all over the floor, and it's flowing. Well, meanwhile, Tina's been out shopping. She's been looking at dresses, looking at hats, looking around at other possibilities, and then she starts to hear this hubbub and people saying things. Something's going on. Something's happening. And she goes out, and she can see in the main street that goes right down the village, there's this yellow flowing of yellow porridge coming down. And she goes, oh, no. She goes, oh, no. I got to remember I got a microphone on. And she's... You gotta remember these things. And so she runs up and she remembers the words. Of course, she gets to the gate. It's flowing out through the yard. And then she runs up and it's like... knee deep inside her house, and she comes into the main room and she says, little pot, please stop boiling, and it just stops right there. But for that day and for many days to come, in order to clean things up and to keep it from rotting, people would often come with shovels and scoop it up and take it down to the river, but also they'd walk around with spoons in their pockets, and every time they felt hungry, they'd eat a little bit of that extra porridge and make the world a better place. So that's a story about abundance, and that's a story that some of us can take with us to our classes. Some of us are going to go follow teachers to classes, and others will stay and sing.
Before we enter into our time of sharing gratitude and sorrows, I, as many of you know, on Tuesday morning, my mother passed away. And I've been in Indiana most of this week. You've heard stories about her in sermons. She's a cornerstone of my life in many ways. And she had been sick for a long time. In a lot of ways, it's a relief and a release for her. And I am sad, but I'm trying to focus on work today, so if it seems like I'm a little out of it or whatever, just know I'm okay. I have the support I need, and I'm grateful for the many messages and calls and texts and things that folks have sent. So thank you for your support. And I will be involved in going to Indiana and back and forth for about a month or so. And just appreciate everything that folks have done. So at this time, I invite you to move to our microphone here and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
Good morning, all. I'm Nancy Kniff, and I want to say how grateful I am for the fragrance-free area. I'm like synthetic fragrances are toxic for me. I'm like seriously toxic. So I appreciate this immensely. So thank you.
I'm Robin Berkeley. I just wanted to share some really good news. Margaret is going to be attending University of Missouri St. Louis next year. She got awesome scholarship money, and she's going to be studying with the Ariana String Quartet, which I think is pretty awesome. So I'm really excited.
Hi, I'm Tracy Howe Koch, and I just want to say tomorrow Matt and I will be married 19 years, and it's amazing how fast time has gone by.
Hi, I'm Debbie Lovell. This is just a little thing, but last May we had our Mother's Day plant sale, and I noticed yesterday that some of the plants I bought are peeking up, some of the flowers, the irises I think are peeking up next to my doorstep, so I was really excited about that, so yay spring.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning.
My father died at 3:20 p.m. Friday.
Hello, I'm Michelle. My longtime coven mate passed suddenly a couple of weeks ago, and so we're still, we laid her, we jokingly call it the meaty bits, we laid the meaty bits to rest a couple of days ago, but still we're planning memorials and that kind of thing because her family did not know she was pagan, did not know about the entire other half of her life, the one that got me to know her for 10 plus years. So I'm still grieving that.
May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all. And may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts. A burden shared become a load lightened.
And yet said thank you for letting me be here. Kleber and I had often talked about doing a public exchange. We just kept forgetting to set the actual dates. I'm glad that this opportunity has arisen. I'm glad you're here. I appreciate you. I need you here on the north side. To come into a time of silence, a brief moment of silence, I have these words inspired by my colleague, Victoria Weinstein. Let us join our hearts and spirits in prayerful reflection. We have been given the bounty of this beautiful day, the energy of the sun, the power of the mighty Missouri, the shoots of life rising from the earth. For this abundance, let us be grateful. We've been given the gift of our worship tradition. It draws us together in this house of hope and memory, of learning and healing, of growing and serving, connecting us to generations that have been and those that are to come. We've been given the inspiration of brothers and sisters in this faith, those who walk the path of the free religious life, who companion us in joys, who share our sorrows, and who are ours, by some fate or necessity, to care for and to love, to forgive and challenge for this time of our lives. For this abundant community, we lift up our grateful hearts. And we've been giving minds to wonder and reason, and voices to speak and sing, voices to shout out against injustice, and hands to work to build a better world that we would have for ourselves and our children. We've all been given the chance to use our gifts in service of love and justice, of truth and compassion. For this mighty abundance, for all that we have, let us be grateful together in a few moments of silent meditation or prayerful reflection. Always it is good to speak with one another, and always it is good to share a moment of silence with one another and the mystery that is this world, this universe, this life. Now please sing Spirit of Life.
A reading, Abundance Mentality by Stephen Covey. An excerpt from The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, the chapter Habit 4, Think Win, Win. In Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Covey discusses how the principle of win-win is essential to developing a successful relationship and agreements. He says, character is the foundation of win-win, of the win-win paradigm. And everything else builds on that foundation. There are three character traits essential to the win-win paradigm. These are integrity, maturity, and abundance mentality. Most people are deeply scripted in what they call the scarcity mentality. They see life as having only so much, as though there were only one pie out there. And if someone were to get a big piece of the pie, it would mean less for everyone else. The scarcity mentality is the zero-sum paradigm of life. The abundance mentality, on the other hand, flows out of a deeper inner sense of personal worth and security. It is the paradigm that there is plenty out there and enough to spare for everyone. It results in sharing of prestige, of recognition, of profits, of decision making. It opens possibilities, options, alternatives, and creativity. The abundance mentality takes personal joy, satisfaction, and fulfillment and turns them outward. Appreciating the uniqueness, the inner direction, and the proactive nature of others. It recognizes the unlimited possibilities for positive, interactive growth and development, creating new third alternatives. So ends the reading. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning and purpose and value in our own lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? And as you give to our plate this morning, you are invited to consider how your spiritual life, that life of meaning and value and purpose, are enhanced through your own giving, creating in spiritual enrichment, a life of meaning and purpose itself. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given. Before we begin our second reading that leads into our sermon, I want to first say what an abundant day. Mm-hmm. So many people here today. It's such a blessing to see so many faces in this amazing building on this beautiful weather. I know it won't last, but love it while it's here, right? Enjoy the abundance that is present in the moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I am filled with abundance to have my colleague, Reverend Perchlick, here. I met Thomas when I was serving as a chaplain in Indianapolis, and we were in the same minister's clergy group together. And he was the minister in the town where my high school is located. And so I had a chance to go and preach in that church for him a couple of times. And so I never had a church to invite him to. And it's such a kind of full circle moment that he's able to speak here today. So it's a privilege and an honor, and a sense of abundance and collegial relationship as well. And so our second reading, enough is enough, or enough is enough, by Walter Brueggemann. We live in a world where the gap between scarcity and abundance grows. It grows wider and wider every day. Whether at the level of nations or neighborhoods, this widening gap is polarizing people, making each camp more and more suspicious and antagonistic toward one another. But the peculiar thing, at least from a biblical perspective, is that the rich, the ones with the abundance, rely on an ideology of scarcity, while the poor, the ones suffering from scarcity, rely on an ideology of abundance. How could this be? The issue involves whether there is enough to go around, enough food, water, shelter, space. An ideology of scarcity says, no, there's not enough. So hold on to what you have. In fact, don't just hold on to it, hoard it. Put aside more than you need so that if you do need it, it will be there in the future, even if others must do without. An affirmation of abundance says just the opposite. Appearances notwithstanding, there is enough to go around, so long as each of us takes only what we need. In fact, if we are willing to have but not to hoard, there will even be more than enough left over. The Bible is about abundance. From first chapters of Genesis, God not only initiates abundance, calling forth plants and fish and birds and animals, but promises continued abundance by commanding them to increase and multiply. And on that sixth day, God proclaims the sufficiency for everything that has the breath of life and declares all this very good. And then God takes the Sabbath. The Sabbath spent catching up on chores we were too busy to do during the week is hardly a testimony to abundance. A Sabbath spent encouraging those who want to fill our free time with calls to amass more possessions, whether the malls with their weekend specials or televised sports events with their clutter of commercials, does nothing to weaken the domain of scarcity. Honoring the Sabbath is a form of witness. It tells the world that there is enough. Too often the church has understood God's unconditional grace as solely a theological phenomenon, instead of recognizing that it has to do with the reordering of the economy of the world. There ends our reading.
Thanks, Angela. Walter Brueggemann, some of you may know, was taught at Eden Seminary, professor of Old Testament studies, and there is now the partner of a Unitarian Universalist minister who's in that same job at Eden Seminary. And while we're introducing people, I wanted to mention that it's a lovely person I've known for 30 years who gave up hanging out with her friends, bragging about her poetry, and exploring great books just to be with me and to be with you. That's Amy Genova, my wife. Imagine how, just to be aware of how abundant the universe is, how vast and incredible is this place, the vast place in which we have come to be. I'm very proud of my brother. He actually designed some of the electrical components on the Hubble Space Telescope, part of its upgrades when they went up and did some upgrades on it. But the Hubble has opened our minds, our awareness of this universe. You may have seen the photos of that sort of little dark patch of sky, and you look up at that, the Hubble looks at that a little bit more closely, and you can see all the stars that are there, and then it looks at it more closely, and there are galaxies, entire hundreds of swirling galaxies filled with stars and who knows what else, all hidden to our normal sight, invisible to us, and yet there. Beyond imagining, beyond counting, beyond really understanding. And then just think, as Carolyn Broach, a microbiologist at the University of Idaho, along with many other estimates from other scientific studies, notes, the truth is that we are all practically walking petri dishes. We have bacterial colonies upon our bodies and deep within our bodies. There are more, literally in number, more bacterial cells in our bodies than human cells. We are legion. We are community. We are ecosystems, each one of us. Just you, sitting there by yourself. You're this entire ecosystem, an entire community. Of course, the nice thing about bacteria is they're very, very small. So even though there's lots and lots of them, they really don't take up that much space, much smaller than human cells. But even this, just think of this, in your head, there's over 1,000 million, 1,000 million synapses, those little connections between the brain cells, sparking along at 20 or 50 times a second. 1,000 million is how many stars would fill one and a half thousand Milky Way galaxies. Galaxies that could be seen by the Hubble telescope. Vastness, numbers, space, time beyond our imagining and our understanding. This is the universe in which we live. And in our symbol, in our tradition, the primary symbol that we use to evoke that abundance is a chalice. It's a cup. So it's basically a cup or a bowl with a stem. It has the bright dancing flame of spirit and truth within it. But think about the chalice itself. It's very interesting that if you look at chalice lighting words, you go through the internet or you look in this hymnal here, you'll find that most of the words, as Meghan Trainor would have said, are all about the flame, no chalice. They only focus on the brightness of light and the fire and the flame of the spirituality, and they forget how important is that solid cup, which is the bowl of the earth, which is the human womb, which is the source of life. First time I ever thought about the chalice itself was when I read Rayanne Eisler's book decades ago called The Chalice and the Blade. And there she invokes the idea of a perfect society, this partnership model of society where diversity is not automatically equated with inferiority or superiority, but partnership and sharing. She holds up that cup against the sword of dominance. And there have been many others who have held up the cup. The Hussites, those Christian radicals in the Czech Republic, or Bohemia back then. I have some bloodlines on my father's side that go back to Bohemia, so I have a particular pride of that country. And Jan Hus holding up the cup, which emphasized the community, the power of the faithful, rather than concentrating it all in the hands of the priests. A chalice is a symbol of sharing and of abundance. It is never empty, like the earth, always willing to bear new life, bring new possibilities, and it's full of power. We lose it, and we forget about it, and we become afraid of scarcity again. In the legends of King Arthur, the holy chalice, the holy cup, or the holy grail is this source of hope and healing. Some of you have read some of the ancient works or heard the stories that talk about King Arthur, this great idea, this image of the one who finds hope for his land. It's a dark and trying times. There's that one moment where God just thunders. There's a thunder and the clouds part and God speaks and says, "Arthur, Arthur, king of the Britons, your knights of the round table shall have a task to make them an example in these dark times." And Arthur said, "Oh, good idea, Lord." And God says, "Of course it's a good idea." Taking this from Monty Python. good scholars, medieval scholars. The cup is always somewhere out there evoking hope, but our own sickness blinds us to it. Instead, we wander and stumble through the world seeing grail-shaped beacons. We run into fools who tell us that they have the grail. It's very nice, they say. And then insult us and don't share with us. And Arthur and his knights in the Monty Python and the Holy Grail finally come to that castle where the grail should be. They only find the insulting Frenchmen. And they're driven by this scarcity mentality, thinking there can only be one cup and they must have it. And so Arthur cries out, "French persons, today the blood of many a brave knight shall be avenged. In the name of God, we shall not stop our fight until every one of you lies dead and the Holy Grail returns to those who God himself has chosen." In the movie, it's very funny. Gets arrested, all right, not too long after that. But how many times have we heard people say those same words in order to drive war? You see how the scarcity mentality, the sense that you're going to take from me what I need, drives us to fight one another and to kill one another on a massive scale. And we see it every day, you can hear it every day in the news. Hatred, fear. The chalice should be a symbol of abundance, of that community that embodies the spirituality of abundance, the beloved community, as Martin Luther King Jr. said. It's a community of the scriptures of the Jews and Christians placed at the very beginning of all things, as Brueggemann Mutman points out, in the creation of all things. All things are good. All things are abundant. The term abundance mentality, Brueggemann used abundance ideology, but he was echoing the words abundance mentality that was coined, as far as I can tell, from Stephen Covey in his book from back in the 80s, I think, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. But it's an ancient idea. Well, Jesus says, consider the lilies of the field. No one, you know, they don't work or spin, and yet who could be arrayed as beautifully as they? And the birds, their food, and their beauty, and their lives of joy. But Covey does not say that the win-win paradigm, the idea that there's abundance and we can all share, is the only paradigm in the world. He talks about, he doesn't even say it's really the always and automatically the best. He doesn't say just think about abundance and just share all the time. He says the best choice depends upon reality. The challenge is to read reality accurately and not translate win, lose, or any other scripting into any particular situation. He cautions wisdom. I can remember raising our two daughters, small children, and we teach them how to play games. I would intentionally lose. I would intentionally lose the game because I wanted my daughter to feel the joy of winning. I wanted to teach her about games. So I would lose and she would win. Of course, to some extent, I was still winning to see the joy in her face. To share with children means sometimes giving up all sorts of things. I think of the first few years where I lost a lot of hours of sleep and Amy lost a lot more. And all the money that we spent and all the food and time and energy and, you know, free time and freedom, all those things that I gave up. In a sense, I was losing so that my daughter and my daughters would win in life. It's not always automatic. The win is what happens exactly. Life is sometimes difficult. Covey points out most situations, however. Most situations are part of an independent reality. And when we are in an independent reality, then win-win is the only viable alternative of all the other five. One of my teachers, Thich Nhat Hanh, says this. I study Buddhism, and Thich Nhat Hanh is a Vietnamese Buddhist teacher. He said, we are here to awaken from the illusion of separateness. This is, of course, in actuality, very hard to do. Simple idea, to realize that separateness is an illusion. There are all sorts of problems. There are reasons that we forget that we are connected. First is, of course, that there are limits to things. Each of us will live, if we're very, very lucky, about 35,000 days. Most of us don't even get 35,000. We know this. At some level, we understand there's only so many days. Some people drive themselves, try to not sleep or whatever, because they're afraid. They feel the scarcity. They feel the limits. And of course, some of us have experienced poverty. We may be experiencing financial limits right now in our lives, not having enough or not quite enough or being afraid of not having enough. It always hovers over us more deeply since 2008. This country has felt its fear, and we know that there are people, most people in the world, a huge chunk of them, who live far less abundant lives than we. And arthritis comes. Sensitivities come. We feel the limits of being human, of our individual selves, and so we begin to feel the scarcity mentality. We feel there's not enough. And that's why I brought out Tina. There is, of course, a reality of too much. There have to be limits. It's essential to have limits. You can't just say, there's just things are pouring all over the place, or else you start to have this rotting pudding in your streets, right? Abundance is not unlimited. Abundance is not, there's everything so much forever and ever. It's that there is enough if we are careful, if we share wisely. Abundance mentality, as Covey and others have pointed out, it's not just that there's enough or there's more than enough. It's that there's enough if we share wisely. And so she is respectful to the pot, the source of her food. She remembers how to treat it well, just as we have to be respectful to the earth. You can't just keep using burning fossil fuels massively as if it could go on forever and not expect some sort of consequence. You can't keep using massive amounts of nitrogen fertilizer to grow more and more food out of the earth and not expect some sort of troublesome consequences. The blooms of algae choking out life near the coastlines because of all the fertilizer we pour into the rivers, this river that flows right by us, running to the sea. Our resources are not unlimited. They need to be used wisely and carefully shared. Her mother was foolish, just thinking, oh, the specifics don't matter. I'll just share with whatever, with whoever, whenever, because it gives something, it makes me feel better. Forgetting that it's interconnected and that one must set limits. Of course, the first thing in response to limits when you start to feel scarcity is to remember the abundance, to think about how much there is. Remember those times in your life where there has been abundance. And usually those times are because you were with other people. You had community of some sort. Usually abundance is not all about just you getting something more, but it's because you were sharing with others. Those times that are most rich and full in our lives are sitting around with people, sharing a meal, as I hope we do later today, and you just feel the abundance of the people around you, the abundance of love and compassion. And that's what inspires that feeling of that mentality of abundance. And then secondly, you got to realize when you start to feel that the world is scarce, it's not your job to make the world more abundant. You don't have to force against some evil reality and try to forge out abundance. It's already there. It's already there. You just need to learn how to live out of that reality. Try to live wisely. Try to live generously. Try to live abundantly. Bring that spirit out and show other people how they can live by abundance. And when we are all aware of that abundance and we all start sharing together, then the world starts to become what it already is, a place where there is enough for everyone if only we will share wisely. And of course, the second problem is that there are people who really do not have any sense of an abundance mentality. People who may have all sorts of stuff, may have lots, and still be filled with scarcity, as Brueggemann pointed out. Those who are very wealthy usually are those who are grasping. Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z just sang a song about Holy Grail, the Holy Grail of fame, and they found out that its contents are rather, at least ambivalent. Everyone seems to be competing to be at the top of the heap, and people confuse win-lose with win-win. They think if they get enough, that's good enough. Sometimes we often do this with children. We'll divide things. We'll say, okay, I've got exactly six, and you're going to have six, and you're going to have six, and, well, this one's a little bit wider, so I'm going to, you know, sharing. That all of that is reinforcing the sense that if you have too much, then you're going to have not enough, and later you're still going to have too much. You know, that it reinforces that sense that there's not enough. If you have to be careful about the way in which you're sharing and dividing in a way that reinforces that there's always more than enough. We can always get more cookies, and don't worry about maybe you're not getting enough right now, but you're getting a little less than someone right now. You'll get enough. What you have is enough. You got your enough cookies, and then maybe later you'll get more, and they'll get a little less. But always there's more than enough. The writers of the Bible often include words like those that Mary says when she learns that she's pregnant. She says, God has scattered the proud. He has brought down the mighty from their thrones. He has exalted those of humble estate. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty. These words are repeated over and over in different ways, different prophets, writers. But don't set it up as a fight. Don't set it up as a competition. Because I know lots of rich people who are not selfish, who do not live by a scarcity mentality. They share, and they share abundantly, because they understand that they're part of the community, that everyone is interconnected, and that they have now been given something that they need to give back. To those who are given much, much is expected. They're willing to share because they understand the connections. I've known these people in Unitarian Universalist congregations. I've known them outside, living by generosity and a generous mind. The point is that giving to the church is not to give a setting amount, but a meaningful amount. It's not to give to others a particular amount. It's about proportionality. That's why we talk about proportions and percentages. Muslims, Christians, Jews, they all approach giving not from a set amount, but from a percentage of one's resources. In the biblical tradition, it's called tithing, giving a one-tenth of what you have or what you've gained or what your profits are. And the exact rules shift around. It depends on which rabbi you're talking to. Certain rabbis are a little bit better at getting a bigger tithe and giving bigger tithes than others. In Islam, they have the term of zakat. And there's some fuzziness about exactly what the zakat is. But always the emphasis is to temper your sense of greediness, your temper, the sense that you own anything, and to remind yourself that you are part of a community and that you need to share. It's always the essential religious teaching. In this church, we don't set a specific amount, just as in First Church St. Louis. We just say, how meaningful do you want your giving to be? And when you give meaningfully to this church, then this church becomes a meaningful place that gives meaningfully to the world, that shares abundantly and promotes that mentality of abundance. And Jesus feeds the crowds, the hungry crowds, in the stories the Gospels tell. He's reminding people that the wounds of scarcity can be healed by faith in community, a community that is built upon the stones of abundance. So we forget. We forget that we are connected. We begin to believe it's impossible. We begin to believe that others are going to take from us. And there are situations in which people who are living, you know, you run up against the people in ISIS. I mean, how do you build win-win with them when win-win means I'm going to take everything that you value from you? So it's difficult, and we forget. And that echoes out throughout all our lives, and we start to forget that we're connected, and we forget that we need to share wisely. The year before Michael Brown was killed, just south of here, the Riverview Garden School District was struggling. Their schools were in terrible shape. They had been unaccredited since 2007. Parents felt their schools were not only failing to educate, but parents felt that their schools were dangerous places to bring their children. And then the transfer law was draining the district of students. It was draining the district of cash. There was clearly a sense of scarcity dominating the people in that area. This district serves the Canfield Apartments where Michael Brown lived. And because the district had no money, they shut down several preschools. They had stopped or radically cut back on transportation of small children to school. And of course, that was limiting the parents, and the parents were feeling the scarcity. And the state had no money, no solid program to put any better books, no better teachers, no programs into the district. The people in that district were feeling very isolated, very scarce. But in the months that immediately followed after Michael Brown was killed, the state of Missouri, was able to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to put armored men into that neighborhood, to put armored vehicles into that neighborhood, and to put tear gas not only onto the streets, but into the houses of the people of that neighborhood. Now, I understand there's a big difference between long-term cost of paying teachers or long-term costs of paying education and a short-term activity of police actions. But any community that finds it easier to protect property than to protect its children and to nurture its children is seriously confused about how to share wisely. It's not living out of abundance, but out of scarcity and limit and fear. But our faith, the faith that we represent, our particular Unitarian Universalist heritage, as well as the larger faith of liberal faith, the larger liberal religious community that we serve, has always been one of sharing, of abundance, of goodness, and justice. The Hungarian Unitarian churches that we're in some relationship with, we have a partner church relationship. Very joyfully to be able to go and meet the people that we're in partnership with over in Romania, in Transylvanian region. And many of the congregations there have the words Ege os Isten carved in the door. God is one. And so I was very pleased when I drove up here this morning and I remembered that on your building you have the very similar words. It says one Lord, one faith, one fold, one shepherd. Usually those words are very exclusive, meaning that we're the one little people and everyone else is left out. But if they're on your building, what they mean is that all of humanity is one. There's only one reality, one earth, and that one Lord is the mentality of abundance that has guided us to come together, to share our religious lives, to inspire one another, to care for one another, to share food, and to share our money with one another, to strengthen the voice that we are all one. All humanity, all living beings are one, and we are tied together, and our fates are tied together. You've heard that our truth includes all, an abundance mentality. To nurture abundance, begin with abundance. Sing to the abundance, celebrate and praise, and then live accordingly. So before we do a little ritual of gathering in some cards, we plan to sing a song of praise and celebration, which is the closing hymn number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth.
For the splendor of the sun.
spirit child. Yeah. Much more inclusive. So I know I've gone on a little bit long, and I know that it's a little bit fast, and I know you can smell the food, but I have a few more little words, because now it is a time to fill out our estimate of giving cards. I call it the estimate of giving because it allows for a little bit more freedom. Now, a pledge or a promise kind of feels like you get locked in, and sometimes people will change their pledge without telling people that they've changed their pledge. So we're doing an estimate of giving card. And if anyone's a visitor here today, you don't have to be uncomfortable about being here. Just think about abundance. Expression of commitment to our church by estimating our financial giving is something we do every year. Our faith is about what we do with what we have, right? With time and money and energy. So you can stay and fill out a card if you're a visitor, if you feel moved. So when people begin bringing their cards forward, you can comfortably rise, and we ask everyone who's here to go to Worker Hall and remember that you are fully welcome to stay for the luncheon. We have more than enough. There is more than enough. So if you're a member or active friend of this church, and if you're not quite ready to complete the card again, it's just like being a visitor, but don't you feel pressure? You forbid that Unitarian Universalists should pressure people. Accept to work for justice and to be inclusive and to love one another. Given, but it's more than that. It's about giving. The giving and religious activity always should be something that is freely done from the Spirit, from your own integrity. What is most meaningful? That's what we're asking over. What is the most meaningful thing that I can do? What is the most meaningful gift I can give? Not what is needed, because we only have so much, but what makes me feel like this is truly an act of spirituality and trust and faith, a wise sharing. So we're going to ask the ushers to distribute the estimate giving of cards to everyone. You can, if you make your financial decision with someone else, you can just fill out one card per household and pass on the extra cards. After we fill out these cards, you can go directly to the Kate Worker Hall. Food is being prepared. There'll be no delay. There should be food. We're not even going to stop for a blessing or something. We can say that later after everyone's been served and we're ready to count the cards. So this is an act of worship, an act of expression of what is of value, giving shape to what is of worth in your lives. So the card says, in response to my wish to create meaning and worth, in abundance, as a concrete expression of my values and my commitment to this church, my faith in its power, I plan to take one step in my giving. My desire is to step up. This is if someone's, there's a couple things to mark. Of course, there's not one that goes, if I'm going from 0.05 to 1%, but you can mark if you're just going up. The very top line, if you're just going up a little bit, if it's any increase at all, just say, my desire is to step up. You don't have to set an exact amount. And then you put in a per week commitment if you can. Mark if it's an increase over last year. And then I will pay weekly, monthly, quarterly, or annually. Kind of guess that. And then go ahead and fill it out. It's very helpful to our record keepers if we have names. We need to have the names and make sure the addresses and everything. Sometimes those things change over time faster than databases do. So please make sure that it's accurately filled out. And then when you have filled out your card, take your card to this basket. We've placed a basket up here. And when you put your card into the basket, say something. Say amen. Say so be it. Say blessed be. Say any words of benediction that are most meaningful to you to mark that this is how you end the worship today. And then go on into the fellowship, into the time of celebration and gladness and abundance. Wait here, I'm gonna go first.